Hello and welcome to Real Chat with Kat, the podcast dedicated to igniting your entrepreneurial spirit and empowering you to conquer new horizons. In this podcast, we chat with inspiring entrepreneurs on their journey to success through some amazingly insightful and expansive conversations. These episodes thrive on thought-provoking chats where our guests fearlessly explore their path to success, sharing their experiences, failures, and triumphs. No topic is off limits as we deep dive into the talked about and not so talked about pieces it takes to build a business, overcome limiting beliefs, deal with personal struggles, and everything in between that shapes our lives and our businesses. I'm your host, Kat Polsonelli, creator and founder at The Lotus Effect, where we believe that success is not just about strategies and tactics, it's about cultivating a powerful mindset and creating customized business operations that align with you and your true purpose. Whether it's mastering time management, improving productivity, enhancing leadership skills, or simply fostering a growth-oriented mindset, we'll provide you with the tools and strategies to flourish in both your business and personal life. I'm so excited to have you join us today in this episode, so get ready to feel empowered and inspired as we learn together and from one another on how to rise above challenges, break through limitations, and unlock our full potential. Let's dive in. Hello, hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining me today on this episode of Real Chat with Kat. I am so excited to have you guys here with us today, and I have a fantastic guest, so I'm super excited to have this conversation today. So, John Jennings, thank you so much for being a part of today's podcast.
Yeah, great to be here with you, Kat. Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So, you know, as we dive right in, do us all a favor and tell us who you are, what it is that you do, and what got you into your space.
Okay. That could take a little while, but we'll try to keep it short. I'm a business and leadership coach, and I'm located in Louisville, Kentucky. I've been doing this independently professionally coaching for 6 years. But I have a career in corporate IT, and then after 25 years of that, I went into a kind of entrepreneurial IT role and worked for a couple of small companies, a startup, venture-backed startup kind of deal. Did a variety of different things, and really kind of love the idea of just diving in and helping people solve problems. It was always what I did in a corporate setting, but it's so much different in a corporate setting. You know, your hands are tied so much. And so I really loved getting into that kind of entrepreneurial kind of role and rolling up your sleeves and kind of playing every role that is needed. And so I did that for several years, and it just eventually got to the point where I'm like, this is really fun. I wonder if I can figure out how to do this, as a living. And so I discovered coaching. I didn't really know a lot about it. I worked with some coaches, but didn't really know how the business worked. Right. And so got involved with a coaching organization that helped me learn the ropes, and been doing that now for 6 years, and survived COVID and survived some other things and, ups and downs and everything else. But, I tell people, got the greatest job you can have. I mean, I get to help people. I get to more or less set my own schedule, work, take on as much as I want, and have some balance. And it's something that as long as this brain up here continues to work, I can do it for a long time, which is something I hope I do get to do.
Yeah. I love that too, that you have, all these years of this corporate background, especially with IT, because that's a very demanding. My husband's been in IT for 20 plus years. So he's probably close to 30 now. In IT can mean so many different things, and you guys handle so many things at once. What could you say that, was an interesting or a little bit of a hard transition going from corporate and IT especially, and then moving kind of into that entrepreneurial venture?
I don't know if there's anything hard. It was actually more the opposite. I worked for a couple of Fortune 100 companies in IT. So you're dealing with bureaucracies, you're dealing with, politics, people, you know, stab each other in the back to get ahead, you know, walk over each other, all that stuff. And I, by nature, you know, more of a collaborative work together, let's solve a problem together kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And that always, you know, that didn't always play well in the corporate space. You were kind of expected to be that, you know, climb over the other guy person. And back in 2009, I had had the company I was with, I had gone through several layoffs because of the recession, and I had survived all those. And I had a fantastic year. I actually had probably professionally, as far as problem solved and turning around a team, probably had the best year of my, you know, 25-year career. And I'm meeting with vice president, you know, on a one-on-one in fall of 2009. And he basically said, John, you're not competitive enough. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you need to be coming in here every day, proving that you're better than all your peers, and that you're the, you know, that if we were going to promote somebody, you would be the first person we thought of. And I said, well, you know, I thought my role was to come in here and, you know, solve the problems that our clients had and work together to solve those as a team and accomplish our goals and make the company stronger and better. And, you know, whatever. He looked at me, and I'll never forget it. I mean, I can play it back. I played it back so many times in my mind. He just looked across the desk at me and said, you are so naive. And I went home and I told my wife, I said, you know, I've been there 10 years, had all kinds of success, but I don't think I'm going to be there much longer. And sure enough, 2 months later, I got the gift of a severance package. And it was a nice package, really gave me time to kind of think about things. And I decided I'm never going to go back to a corporate type role. And so took a couple of months, but I found a small company, a small IT company that was looking for somebody to come in and initially just run IT, but I ended up kind of running almost the whole company. It's, you know, took over sales and built a new division and did all kinds of things. But I'll never forget the, you know, first couple of weeks I was in there, they were having some problems with their network. And I'm not really a network guy. I was more on the software side. And I bring in a guy that I knew to look at it. And he's like, oh, you need to upgrade this switch and do this and that, you know. And we were looking at, like, I don't remember, $5,000 or $10,000. And I'm used to, you know, spend $5,000 or $10,000. Okay, there's got to be a requisition form. There's got to be some level of approval. It has to go through, whatever. And I went over to, you know, my counterpart that was, you know, ran the administrative side of the business. And I said, hey, need to buy, you know, some equipment. You know, it's around $10,000. What's the process for approving it? She said, you run IT, right? I said, yeah. She goes, order it or send it to me and I'll order it. And I went,
nice.
I went, you mean I don't have to ask anybody? And she's like, no, you run IT. That's your job. You know, get it fixed. And then I'm like, this is just so liberating, you know, that you can just, companies can actually run this way, you know? So that was the start of just a refreshing period of my career, you know, where I just got to get in and solve problems and, you know, not say we didn't have to worry about a budget. I mean, you do, but just not having to deal with all the corporate type, you know, bureaucracy was just so freeing for me. So I love working with small businesses today that are kind of in that same boat. They're just trying to grow, trying to figure things out, just need somebody to help them, you know, navigate those things.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you brought this up too about, you know, you were in one place which had this corporate feel, and then you were in this other place and there was a lot more freedom, because while there are a lot of big corporations that are so stuck behind times that they feed off the competitiveness, there are other companies that do want to allow the freedom, that do want to allow employees or consultants to be able to help make the decisions, because they realize that having the outside view is actually going to help that company grow 10 times more than everybody fighting each other.
Yep. So, and you know, the whole concept of what your corporate culture is like, and, you know, what is underlying, whether healthy or not, is something that I've become such a so aware of, I guess, that that when I go in and talk to a business owner or interview their team members, I can almost always sense what's going on, you know, where that source of, whether it's gonna, you, often it's that hyper competitiveness, but sometimes there's a lack of trust. Sometimes there's other things going on that is creating an unhealthy culture. And it's what I try to help with. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And I would love for you to elaborate on that as well, right? Because everybody has their own definition of like what business coaching or consulting or, you know, executive coaching, what those things mean to them in their business. So I would love for you to define more and help the audience understand what that means to you specifically.
Yeah, it is a good question because everybody has their own preconceived notions. I'm not a life coach, although certainly there's things about life that we deal with. I'm a business and leadership coach, and I try to keep that, you know, stay in those lanes. The business leadership side, I'm normally working with a small business that wants to grow, and you know, I keep it pretty simple, pretty straightforward. If you have an attitude towards growth, if you want to make your business, you know, bigger and better, stronger, and all that sort of stuff, that's the type of people I like to work with. And that might mean there's culture issues that are getting in the way. It might mean that you've got product issues or marketing issues or other things. We'll figure that out. But you know, I just help break down those potential barriers and help them figure out what that looks like. Ask those questions. Some of the most common things I see is, you know, a company doing the same thing for several years in a row and not growing and then wondering why it's not happening. You know, it's a definition of insanity, right? So you know, that is often one of the most common things. You know, people are just afraid to make that change, to open that new office, to expand that new product line, to do those things they've put off for a long time. So, you know, we figure out what those barriers to that is and get through those and, you know, just press forward, help them get through the confidence and things that they need to pull that trigger. On the leadership side, I'm usually working more with how you are as a team leader. And are you effectively leading your team? Are there things going on that with your, you know, your communication style? Is there something going on maybe with in the area of trust? I'm a big believer in some of the factors around how you build an organization, a culture based on trust. I look at those types of things and help it, you know, a leader determine where those issues are and kind of break that down. So that side of it does get a little more into, you know, the psychology. I always say I'm not a therapist and I didn't go to school for that. And I didn't play one on TV, but you know, there's a certain aspect of therapy. So some of my clients call me their business therapist. And that's kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, but I wear it with pride, I guess.
I love that. You know what, though? I love that you bring up leadership and those that are leaders versus those that are the bosses or those that are in charge of the team, because I think that bringing in that different language can help people see those roles a lot differently as well versus the way it's always been projected in that area. So what would you say defines leadership for you?
Well, it's not a title. I've done leadership coaching with people who are like, you know, an individual contributor doing, you know, accounts payable or doing purchasing or doing whatever, because you know, their company said, we want to invest in this guy. We think he has potential. We want him, you know, to be a better leader someday. Or, you know, it's a director or a VP or a C-level person that wants to get to that next level. You know, mm-hmm. So those are very, very common, but it's not about the title. It's really about, a leader is somebody who leads. It's someone who is responsible for having people around them to inspire and to, you know, get, you know, to move into some direction. So whether that's a formal title where you're managing or directing or, you know, whatever, or whether you're just in a role that, you know, is, you know, a leader. I work with a, a C-level person in a pretty large organization right now, and she only has five direct reports. No, I'm sorry. She only has about two direct reports, and she only has about five reports total. But she's, you know, a C-level person in a pretty large healthcare organization. It's just, you know, her department's very small, but she has influence throughout the organization because of her title, impact, being a C-level person. So, you know, it's not about anything org chart related. It's really about influence and things like that.
I love that. And I love that you talk about influence as well, because that makes such a difference in any situation, right? Whether it's a large corporation, a small business, those that are running their own entrepreneurship journeys, that to me makes the difference in how someone comes across. And I love that you pointed out that the title does not matter, because you are so right. I have been in situations where those that technically are in charge are not the ones that people are drawn to. They're not the ones that people will actually take direction from, right? You get a lot more pushback from this person versus this person. And this person may not necessarily be in charge, but it's the way that they communicate. It's the way that they lead. It's the way that they give other people space that they want to be in as well. And that is what draws people in. And I think that that works across the world, you know, whether it's in business, in your personal life, with your family. I think that that in itself plays a big role. And I'd love your take on it as well.
Oh yeah. And I won't say I've saved a marriage or two, but I have had clients say this has helped my marriage as much as anything, or I've used this with my kids now. I understand why they are the way they are, or whatever, you know, because, you know, communication is at the root of a lot of problems, right? And a lot of times communication is a problem because either we're not communicating in a way that other people can understand, or we don't communicate clearly. Lack of clarity in communication is a huge issue. People think, oh, I'm just dumbing it down for everybody. I'm just going to give it high level. And all that does is create more confusion. Or you have the opposite. I have one client in particular that if he can say it in two sentences, he will say it in 200. You know, it doesn't. No email is too long for him. You know,
it's like, no.
And I'll say, you know, you really just said, you know, we're going to be coming out and seeing you next week or something simple, but yet you postulated, you know, 20 paragraphs of other stuff unrelated to what you really were wanting to tell them. And, you know, that leads to confusion. I always say, one of my little taglines is I'm a simple man with simple ideas. I think most leaders overcomplexify things, and, you know, and I've worked with some very smart people. One of the startups I work with, the engineer was brilliant. He had multiple patents and all kinds of things, but he could not have a simple conversation. Everything became complex, and therefore he struggled to sell his product because, you know, someone just wants the simple facts, and if they like it, they're going to buy it. But no, by the time you're done talking for an hour, you've now lost them because they don't understand what they're buying now.
Yeah.
So it's so funny how people, you know, so I think you have to be pretty smart to keep it simple, but some people are, you know, they're very smart in the books, but they don't really understand human communication, the human factors of that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's one of the gifts I feel like I have, and I help people hopefully see that. And work on that.
Yeah. And I love that you talk about keeping it simple, because I've done this myself. So when I worked in medical administration, I had the task of working with a small company for a while, and I did everything inside of that company. So I ran the front desk, I did the billing, I did the training, I did the therapy, like all these things. And I had to be the one to also help everybody else do all the things. And what I noticed was I would always try to explain it in the way that I understood it, and completely not pay attention to their face of knowing that you've lost someone. And then when they would come back to ask the question, I would get so uncomfortable because I thought I told it so good that I just like started spewing off all kinds of things, which then just led to more confusion. And they're like, well, but I didn't, that's not even what I was asking. I don't. So I feel like sometimes it comes from our own insecurities as well. Like we try to fill the room with words because we're afraid that a pause, a moment of silence, or not as many words means that there's something wrong or that you don't know what you're talking about. So I love that you talk about this communication aspect, because I do believe, firmly believe, that if you upgrade the way that you can communicate and lead others, that it does have a ripple effect out in your life if you use it to the full extent.
Yeah. It's interesting what silence can do. And I've learned to grow, and I'm a high I, you know, I'm an extrovert, you know, I'm very intense when it comes. And I've learned, one, in doing, you know, the first time I did a DISC assessment, I realized that high I, one of the downsides of it is people don't always take you serious. You know, they go, boy, you know, he's got the gift of gab, but you know, and I don't want to be, you know, sorry for those, if anyone's listening, a used car salesman, that's not me. I don't want to be that. And so I've learned to, even though I almost always state my opinion, I've learned to try to back off, and I've learned to use silence. And this has been a journey, you know, it's not, certainly not something I knew early in my career, but probably around 15 years or so ago, I was in a situation with a project that had gone a little sideways, and we were meeting, this was when I was in that Fortune 100 company. So I was meeting with the COO and the CIO. So I was meeting with, you know, the top leaders in the organization, and you know, a little bit of the light was shining on me because I was on the IT side of the project. And what had happened was we had said, this is not ready to roll out, do not roll it out. And the business side said, no, we're going to roll it out anyway.
No.
And so I fortunately had documented and covered my backside, you know, several ways. And so we're in this meeting, and they turned to me and said, why did you roll it out? And I said, well, as we stated, and I just stated the fact, not pointing fingers. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget the COO, who's a pretty well-known business person. He looked over at the business leader and said, you did it anyway. And then he just stopped, and the room was silent for a minute. It was the most awkward minute professionally I've ever experienced, because he was just waiting for the guy to have an answer. And he didn't. And so I went, wow, he said more with silence than he could have by ripping him and cussing him out and all kinds of things. The silence was deafening. And I went, wow, I learned something there.
Yeah.
That you don't always have to have the words. So yeah, communication things are just fascinating to me. I'm not an expert, but I enjoy playing with it. That's for sure.
Oh, I am right there with you. It's something that, you know, I had to learn being in the medical field and dealing with all kinds of different people. And then the one company that I worked with, we dealt with a lot of elderly. And that's a whole nother different way of having to learn to talk with people. And you do have to learn to slow down. You do have to learn that you can't explain too much because you will lose them in the middle of it, right? You do have to learn to pause and ask them like, okay, does this make sense so far? And what I learned was, while I thought it was more of like, okay, you just do this because it's an older generation. No, actually everybody enjoys that, right? So even my kids, when I'm having conversations with my teenagers, and I started kind of playing with communicating with them a little bit different and coming from this leading position versus just the mom, which, you know, to me has been defined as like nagging and complaining and you're supposed to do things. So coming from this different space of how I communicated with my kids and pausing during the conversation to allow them to fill in or to ask them the question, does that make sense what I'm telling you? Do you understand why I'm telling you this? And then allowing them to actually answer it has made a tremendous difference in how my kids not only communicate with me, but how I've also seen them communicate with other people.
Yeah. And using different techniques for sometimes, you know, sometimes words are fine, but sometimes you need to draw it out. Sometimes you need to illustrate things. I carry I think it's a coach's thing. I carry, you know, color markers with me everywhere, you know, because you never know when you need to pull out a flip chart and start drawing stuff get on a dry erase board or whatever. And so, you know, I find a lot of times if what we're saying doesn't seem to be making sense, let's draw it out. Let's illustrate it, whatever that means. And it's, you know, the old picture is worth a thousand words, but you know, some people, that's what they need to learn. And so just recognizing that everybody learns different, listens different, you know, it's a big part of communications.
I love that you brought that up. I love that so much. And maybe that's why I have a ton of colored markers in my office, because I like the colors too.
Yeah. But there's actually the scientific, I mean, so adults in learning, if we see multiple colors, it actually triggers creative things in our chemicals in our brain. So
really?
if you're drawing with black ink or blue ink, you know, it does, you know, that's something. But if you pull out color markers and you do red and blue, I was just doing this in a strategic planning session with a group a couple of days ago. They're like, I really like all your colors. And I'm like, yeah, there's actually a reason. There's a reason behind it. You use these different colors and it triggers the creative mind.
Oh, I love that. I did not know that. And that makes so much sense, because when I started using an a calendar, when I left my paper, I noticed that a lot of people that I worked with did what was called block scheduling. Yeah. And block scheduling can be great, but for me, it was extremely overwhelming, because the person that I was learning from just blocked off different things in their calendar for stuff, but it was all blue. And I was like, I can't do this. Like, everything bleeds together. It all looks the same. I don't know what starts, what ends. So I started color coding. And that's one of the things that I work with my clients now on is, you know, when you make your calendar and you're looking at your day, have your meetings scheduled a specific way, have clients that are paying you scheduled a certain way. You know, my podcasts are scheduled a specific color. And it's amazing how my brain can break that down and see everything that I have to do. And you would think, oh my God, all those colors and everything back, like that would be so overwhelming, but it's actually so relaxing for me.
I'm looking over here at my other screen. My Google Calendar is up. I had to check and see. I actually have 10 different color categories. So like you, I have my podcast color. I have my coaching sessions color. I have my, when I'm working on my business, I have personal, I have one-on-ones. I have, if I'm my dad on there, because I run errands, you know, do things for him.
Yeah.
So it helps me. It makes it less overwhelming, because I'm saying, wait, if they're all one color, it just all looks overwhelming. But if I go, I've got a lot of, say, blue is a specific client, I know I've got that tomorrow. Yeah. Helps.
I also think that it helps the brain break down and compartmentalize what you need to do. So for instance, my oldest one, he was in a car accident, or I'm sorry, a motorcycle accident, almost a year ago. And so I had to take him to a lot of his doctor visits because he broke his foot, so he couldn't drive. And so when we were at the doctor's office and stuff, you know, I would pull up my schedule to kind of see if there was something that we had to fit in. It was so much easier for me to look at those colors and be like, okay, that's a client meeting. I know I can't move that one. Oh, I can move this. This is something for something else. Or this is something I'm working on the back end. Cool. I can move that. That's fine. We can do it there. Like, it makes it so much easier to be able to jump to that section. You know, if I'm needing to look to see ahead of, okay, how many client appointments do I have over the next couple of weeks? I don't have to literally go through every single day and be like, okay, one, there's two. I can literally scan and be like, okay, one, two, three, four. Okay, one, two, three, four. It's so much easier, because the brain picks up on it. And it's, well, it's kind of like your letters, right? Your letters have certain sound, your colors have certain meanings as well. And the brain is able to kind of, in my opinion, pick it apart and then be able to say, oh, that's what that's for. Right. So you label it essentially. And I know that that doesn't necessarily work for everybody. There are a lot of people that are not visual learners, right? You might be more auditory. And so therefore hearing some stuff on repeat works for you, right? Or writing it out, you know, because you have to feel it when you do it works for you. Like there's all these different ways. But for anybody that's been using block scheduling is like, this sucks. Try doing colors. I think it was the greatest thing I ever figured out and learned. And I absolutely love it. And I teach it to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great technique.
It is. It's wonderful. And thank you so much for, you know, explaining the science behind that. Cause duh, I didn't think about that at all. So, so as we're kind of coming to a close, you know, for people that, you know, are in these smaller businesses that know that they want to do things a little bit different, that know that maybe something might need to change, or they realize they've been doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting different results. What would you say to them? What are some things that they could focus on or they could start on that may just give them a little bit of clarity versus actually talking to you as well? But what are some things just to get people to see where they're at?
So the first thing would be hire a coach. And you know, contact me. Second would be read my book, because my book is all about this. So that's out there too. You know, I talk about this in my book, actually. So my book, just throw my little promo out there. It's called Your Baby Is Ugly. And it's for business owners, you know, because, you know, when you come at some point when you own a business, and I've owned a few. When you get to that point where you go, wow, this isn't working, you know, it's not scalable. The processes are broken. My technology is behind, whatever, you know, there's something wrong with the business. And that point where, you know, it's your baby and you realize it's ugly. And so you have to do something about it. And so, you know, it really comes down to listening to those around you, listening to the, whether it's your team members, whether it's a coach or an advisor, it's, you know, being willing to, you know, not be so protective of your baby and believe that it's perfect, because none of us are perfect and none of our businesses are perfect. And so, you know, finding either, okay, the reason we can't grow, one of my very first clients was a very large manufacturing company, which is not even where I have experience, but, you know, I had enough, I think they hired me partly because I didn't, you know, I didn't know their business. And I came in and asked really stupid questions. And it was like, well, gosh, if you already own 60% of the market, what are you going to do to get that next, you know, 20 or 30%?
Mm-hmm.
Really hard. You know, we all know that, you know, there's a saturation point where you just can't get, very seldom can you get, you know, much over 60 or 70% of the market. So, you know, we actually said, okay, let's stop looking at how to expand what we have. Let's look at expanding into something new to start from zero and build up to 60 in a different market. And you know, they had never, I mean, smart people knew the business inside out, but they never really approached it from that way. And it ended up being a huge success. I mean, you know, they did $40 million in like the first year in this new market segment. And it all because, you know, they had never asked what is a fairly simple question, right? Because they were so close to the business, they were just stuck in it. And so, you know, most of the, like I said, one of my mantras, I'm a simple man with simple ideas. You know, I just try to look at what the simplest answer is. I tell a story on myself on, you know, this was back in my corporate IT days. The company had put in an ERP system, you know, large management system to run the business, tens of millions of dollars they had invested. And the system was having trouble. It was having performance issues, and it had been live for several months. And the IT department was getting beat up. It was really getting kind of the noise was getting pretty loud, that the users were not happy with the performance issues. And I wasn't involved with it. I was doing a different, had a different role in IT at the time. And so I remember my boss showed up at my door and he said, how you feeling? You know, he kind of had that look on his face, you know? And I said, okay, I think. And he goes, well, you know, the problems with the system has made it all the way up to CEO, and they're not happy. They said it has to be fixed or else in the next, 90 days. And guess what? You're in charge of fixing it.
Oh, gosh.
I haven't been involved with this project. It was a 2-year implementation. I had not had any involvement in it, but had a reputation of being, kind of a person that looked at things, so I came in, put together a team. We did the whole war room. Okay, this is going to be a 90-day project. We actually solved it in about 2 weeks. And
wow.
And it was, I don't even say what it was, because it was so embarrassingly simple. But the people so close to the project, because they've been in it for 2 years and, did not look at some really basic things. And we came in and we didn't know any better. So you start with a blank slate and you start looking at the most basic things. And we found the problem really early, really easily. So much that we had to actually slow walk it, because we didn't want to completely humiliate the team. And that was an interesting thing. But it's just a great example that the problems are almost always right there in front of us, or the answer to the problem is almost always right there in front of us.
Yeah.
But sometimes that bringing that external person in, or that person that's on the periphery, to come in and help ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a huge point. It's so funny. We were actually just having this conversation with some friends last night about this, about a couple of situations. We have a friend of ours that's publishing his first book. And he's like, the editor was like, you need to change some things. And he was like, I don't see what you need me to change. But he spent so much time on it that his brain is already functioning in one direction. And so being Yep. able to see it in this other direction, or tweaking these small spaces, it just doesn't make sense. Right. And I think that in our business, heck, in our lives, it's so easy, like you said, to be so far into the project or the situation that you can't see anything outside of you. And a lot of times the answer is hovering like right there. I think that it's so valuable to know when you are going in circles sooner rather than later, and go ahead and saying, we need an outside person. We need a third opinion. We need something different. And I love that you had the one company that brought you in because you didn't have the knowledge, because I think that that can be so powerful as well, because you do ask the silly questions that a lot of people thought they had the answers to, but because they give you the answers, you're like, oh, well, this made sense, right?
Exactly.
I love that so much. I definitely, I agree. And I think that
I can relate to the author too.
Because
with my book, we went through the editing process 2 or 3 times. I read that book multiple times. My wife read it. My son was my primary editor. He's a better writer. He's a talented writer. So, he did a great job. We got the print version done. We got it up on Amazon. We start doing the recording for the audio version. And the first chapter is like, okay, there's like 3 really bad grammar things,
Oh no.
You're like, because you're reading it and you're filling in the gaps. You know what you meant to say, and that's what your brain does. And then you're reading it into a microphone and it's like, oh wow, that was really a bad sentence.
I have actually done that before. So funny enough, when I'm working with clients for some that I'm doing some things like on the back end of their business, I am really quick at just like typing out what needs to be done, or if I'm filling in some things or creating automation emails and just, stuff like that. I have learned that I do the same thing because my brain goes faster than my fingers can type. So I will have to read it out loud, but instead of reading it at the pace that I would, like I wrote it, I literally read it word for word And I do that out loud. And it is amazing that when I do that, the things that catch me and I'm like, oh, that made zero sense.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's, if I write another book, which I hope to, I'm definitely going to add that as a step.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I love that. So many tips. I hope you guys are taking notes. So as we come to a close, one of the things, John, that I always ask all of my guests is, do you happen to have a quote or a piece of advice you'd like to leave the audience with?
Wow, I think I already did.
I know, there were so many.
Well, I think that one, obviously, looking for your ugly baby moments is there, but just that point about, like, the way I always say it, I'm a simple man with simple ideas, you know, that the answers are almost always there. You know, you just have to have either ask yourself or have somebody ask you the right questions that they come out. And so, that's my advice, because, you know, we're not solving, you know, brain surgery here. We're just trying to find, you know, the easiest answer to press forward.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's an awesome ending to the conversation. And, you know, before we go, please tell everybody, you know, how can they find you? How can they connect with you? How can they be in your world?
Well, most platforms, I'm John K. Jennings. If you hit johnkjennings.com, that will forward you over to my website. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook and all the different platforms. My book website is uglybabybook.com, and it's available on Amazon. Your baby is ugly. So that's out there as well. And, you know, just love to connect with people and see how we can make our lives better, make each other's lives better.
I love that. Thank you so much. And of course, we'll have all the information in the show notes so you guys can easily find it and be able to connect with him and definitely check out his book. I love it just because of the name of it. It's fantastic.
Actually, real quick, sorry. I met a guy yesterday, we had someone had connected us and we're meeting, and he goes, "You're the ugly baby book guy." And I went, thank you. I mean, that's the first time someone has known. He said, yeah, somebody sent that to me and said, you know, you ought to read this book. So, I mean, the book's only been out for about a month. So it was pretty awesome that.
Wow. Congratulations.
Somebody knew me. I love being known as the ugly baby book guy. So that was.
It's going to be your new nickname, John, just so
you
know.
Well, if that sticks, sure. Why not? You know?
Well, thank you so much again for being a part of the podcast and sharing all of your insight. I can't thank you enough. I think that communication and leadership and knowing when it's time to look outside of yourself is so important in both your business and your personal life.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate your time. It's been a fun interview.
Thank you. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. So thank you again for being a part of the podcast. And to everybody else that's out there, I hope you got some awesome takeaways today. And remember, especially for communication and these leadership skills, this is something that you can build across the board. Whether you're an entrepreneur, you're in the corporate world, heck, if you're a stay-at-home parent, these are things that can make a tremendous difference in your life and ripple out across everyone else that you affect. So I hope that you are taking notes. And if not, you should listen again. Don't forget, you can find all of John's information in the show notes. And until next time, don't forget, do one thing positive for someone each and every day and see the difference that it makes in your life. So until next time, have a fantastic day. Hello again, and thank you so much for being a part of the podcast today. If you enjoyed this episode and it brought tons of value, we ask that you please share, like, and subscribe. Your support means the world to us and helps us to reach even more inspiring entrepreneurs who can benefit from these powerful conversations. If you haven't already, be sure to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform, as this feedback is an amazing gift that fuels our growth and helps us to continually improve this podcast. Looking for an extra dose of inspiration and empowerment? Then be sure to connect with me on social media. You can find me at
The Lotus Effect, where I share valuable resources and tips while sharing my own journey of being an entrepreneur. And if you're interested in learning more about my coaching programs and services, be sure to check out my website at the-lotus-effect.com. Once again, thank you so much for being a part of Real Chat with Kat. Your presence and support makes all the difference. Remember, whether you find yourself in the depths of the mud or on the path of growth, we all have a unique journey. And just like the lotus, some of us start in the dirtiest of mud, yet as we rise and grow, we blossom into something beautiful, unique, and truly one of a kind. To all of my visionaries out there, keep rising and growing as you create your own Lotus Effect.